Hey folks, I'm Tom.
And I'm Vince.
Welcome to Friday Night Beer, a show where two guys who know too much about pop culture and not enough about beer try some beers and explain them in a way that you may understand.
But that you probably won't, and it'll only make sense to us. Either way, we hope you'll be entertained.
All right, Vince, it's quiz time. Do you know who the sixth overall pick was in the 2013 NFL draft?
I would never have known that except for the fact that I thought the exact same thing when I saw this beer. Barkevious Mingo.
And what do you think his wife calls him?
Probably Keeve or Bark.
I was going to say Keeve. Mr. Mingo.
Mr. Mingo.
I've been doing that NFL cross grid game, so my random athlete knowledge is on point today.
Nice.
And today is a very special one because Mr. Mingo is our first ever beer from the Lone Star State.
Bang, bang, bang. Texas. Hey. Not what I thought we would start with, but here we are.
You know, folks, I know you Texans think very highly of yourselves. It took us almost three full seasons to get to your state.
Yeah, we're putting you down a little bit. Putting you in your place.
Yeah. So, a couple things about Mr. Mingo. As I mentioned, it's from Texas, specifically a place called Jester King Brewery, which we will talk about in just a second. It's a farmhouse ale, 5.5%. And Vince, this is not any type of farmhouse ale. This is a farmhouse ale with Roselle hibiscus.
Woo!
Very unique. The inspiration was to make a simple beer with a subtle adjunct. To make Mr. Mingo, they brewed a simple saison with barley and wheat from the Blacklands malt and raw Texas Hill Country water right from their Austin, Texas on-site well. Then they added hibiscus flowers at the end, boiled it, and later dry hopped it. In total, they used 1 pound of hibiscus per barrel.
I feel like that's a lot, but I have no concept as I've never seen hibiscus in the wild. With that, let's crack and get the clock.
Let's crack 2 minutes. Yeah. Woo!
Cheers, Tom.
Wow, I don't know why I'm so fired up, Vince, but I am.
Something about Texas does it to you.
Cheers. Okay, folks, we're going to talk a lot about this beer, but I just got to say, one of the funniest cans Ooh. I've seen in a while.
Got a pink flamingo on it.
We got a bearded guy who's holding what looks like a pina colada and his phone. I don't know why he's not holding a beer.
He's in a kiddie pool, which is that's called something, but I don't know what it is. Like sitting in a lawn chair in a pool.
Okay, wow, we just took my first
sip.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts?
That kind of went down like a smoothie.
Interesting. I can see that.
So I do like hibiscus tea, like hibiscus green tea and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm not really tasting hibiscus with that. I'm tasting more like banana.
Yeah, now that you say it, I taste that banana for sure. I think that's the funk in it, right? As we know, this is a farmhouse, a saison. These are going to be funky a little bit. And once I get into a little bit about what Jester King's about, you'll kind of understand how we got where we got.
Well, let's get right into it then.
Full disclosure, before we begin, I have been to Jester King. I've been a couple of times. It's a wonderful property. It's huge. 165-acre ranch out in Texas Hill Country. It's not like dead center. You got to travel your way outside of Austin on there, but it's a brewery, restaurant, farm, event hall. It's really fantastic. Highly recommend if you're in Austin. Worth it to make the trip out there. But they started as a farmhouse brewery, and their full commitment was to mixed culture and spontaneous fermentation, right? Which, it's got my spidey senses tingling. That is all of the same kind of stuff that breeds good sours. So, as you mentioned earlier, beers incorporate well water, local grains, fruits and vegetables, foraged plants, native yeast, and bacteria, so as to make beer uniquely tied to a time, place, and people. Their inspiration comes from the classic farmhouse breweries of Europe that embrace the principles of subtlety, restraint, patience, full attenuation, and interesting fermentation character. And I'm going to take a pause there because that was a good mouthful, and I want us to try it again with that in mind.
Okay.
Do you taste any of what I just said?
I got to be honest, I don't, but I feel like that's because it's probably mixed very well together. I don't think they let one of these flavors dominate The other.
Restraint.
Right.
And I think this is a perfect example of everything that they've said there. There is some interesting fermentation character in there. That's that funk that we're tasting that makes you think it's a little banana-y, even though there's hibiscus in it. But yeah, I think these guys do a great job. They know who they are, and they stick to their principles. So one of the things I really, really want to focus on here is that they're a land preserve. They've been preserving land in the Texas Hill Country. Their whole theory is that as Austin grows, green space kind of becomes less common. And so their whole theory here and idea is that we're going to keep our small piece of the Hill Country. And they actually farm. They grow some fruits and vegetables there. They planted a vineyard in 2018, and they raise goats, and they're going to continue to add to that diversity of livestock. So this is like a full self-sustaining community. Founded by a couple of brothers, the most interesting part of this is that they found an old machine shop in southern Texas. They literally took it apart, and they moved it to Austin, and then they rebuilt it into the brewery. Their first batch of beer, Boxer's Revenge, was a barrel-aged sour strong ale. And in October of 2010, they sold their first beer to Draught House in Austin, Texas. They abandoned pure culture fermentation, and they focus exclusively on mixed culture beer starting in 2013-ish. And as of 2017... they're completely solar powered. So this has got a lot going on.
Yeah, these guys, they're passionate. They care about the environment. They care about their community. They're backing it up. I respect it. And I got to tell you, first couple minutes in, I'm feeling pretty good about Mr. Mingo.
This tastes great.
Yeah, I can't, you know, despite everything you just said, I can't quite put my finger on it, why I like it. But I think... I feel like I'm experiencing the joy that these guys pour into their products with every sip.
I like that.
Isn't that kind of strange?
If I think about it, I don't think it's strange at all.
I think that's curious. So yeah, dude, if I have to give this, like, we started this because we couldn't describe beers the way that beer snobs could.
Right.
Right. And so let's stick to that. When I have this right here, it funnels almost straight down my throat here. There is no, like, there's no meandering. It is a rushing river of beautifully mixed flavor with just like a twinge of strangeness. Drinking this is like watching a Wes Anderson film to me. That's exactly how it feels. It's really well made and well crafted, but there's also something strange and a little bit off about it.
And its preciseness is almost disarming.
Exactly.
That's how I felt about Asteroid City, which I don't think you've seen that yet.
Not yet.
But, you know, if you've seen Wes Anderson, who by the way, is from Texas, so kind
That's
of fits
right.
in
from,
well.
They him and Owen Wilson.
Yeah, they went to UT.
Austin.
Yeah. So, you know, his movies are very manicured. They're very whimsical. They're generally structured around characters who are... almost annoyingly well-read, I would say.
Yeah.
And the thing about Wes Anderson is I kind of go back and forth with him, and we've discussed this a bit before, but when he hits for me well, I'm fully invested, and I love it. His movies that haven't worked for me, I'm just like a little bit overwrought with the pretentiousness.
Yeah.
I'm not getting that side of that from Mr. Mingo, though.
Like, that's fair.
I
agree.
I think that what you're hitting on is this beer is kind of a paradox, right? Like,
yeah,
it's simultaneously full of ingredients, and there's a deliberate process to it, but the final product is incredibly simple.
Yeah.
So that makes me wonder, like, what are some other paradoxical items in pop culture that you can think of?
Yeah.
I got a few that come to the top of my head, but...
If you got them, flaunt them.
I do. So one of the ones that I have in mind is Fight Club. And hear me out on this.
Okay.
So Fight Club, when it came out, it was embraced by, like, macho idiot guys. Because it was like, yeah, like, I'm going to start my own Fight Club. And I'm going to, like, you know, recite the rules with my buddies. And we're going to, like, have, like, a cult-like mentality to it. And as I get older, I'm realizing that the point of the movie was to criticize all those types of people.
Yeah.
And it was like being critical of consumerism and things that were very like prevalent at the time. Some of them still are, but like, I think that irony went way over some people's heads and they were just like, oh yeah, like I want to go punch some people now. Kind of a paradox, right?
Yeah. So, okay. If you're going to think about it that way, I kind of agree. I think another one that's worth mentioning from that is American Psycho. But if I'm thinking about, like, a paradox is something that physically cannot exist and yet does. And to me, arguably the greatest paradox in all of pop culture is Matthew McConaughey.
I'm glad you brought him up, man.
We're in Austin. We have to. But like the fact that this man is an Academy Award winning actor who doesn't seem to care about anything but having a good time. And those two traditionally have not worked. Brad Pitt has been trying to make that happen for years.
Yeah, and if you read his book, Green Lights, which I did, he almost makes it seem like he serendipitously fell into this career, but that he also planned it out perfectly. Like, everything in the book... Yeah, I know. It's crazy, but like everything in the book is like just these wild stories that when you read them, you're like, there's no way this fucking happened. And he's like, but I had a vision. This is what I wanted always. And like... there's a delusional confidence you have to get to that level. And I think at a young age, he realized he had that gift. That was his true gift. And he's been running with that for 40 fucking years.
Yeah. My favorite is that, yeah, like, if you look at him, and many people are going to make fun of me for this, and that's fine, because I know who I am here. But
yeah,
the man was losing his hair. He absolutely did something to fix it.
He talks about that in the book.
And he says... you know, I made a promise to myself that I would just not lose any more hair. And that's what I did.
He said he made a promise with God.
Like, what the fuck? You made a promise with God? Do you have any idea, like, how many... I have already sacrificed my first, like, 8 children, and it's not working. Okay? And you made a promise with God? Back up, Abraham.
Yeah, that's the part about the book that's, like... really funny is it's all written by him, of course, and I think he thinks of himself as this like bullshit like philosopher.
I don't know what a Mr. Mingo is, but he seems like a good candidate.
Dude, he could be in a movie called Mr. Mingo tomorrow, and I would watch it.
What
the
is
shit
that?
Out of it?
The Beach Bum.
Okay, can I just say that's my favorite performance that he's ever done?
I think it's fantastic.
It's
a lot of people hated it.
Oh my, I fucking love this movie. It's not a good movie, but he is just so unhinged. Like,
he's in his element.
His character's name is Moondog, and he's holding a PBR tall boy in 95% of the movie.
And he's like beyond wealthy. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's transition our Mr. Mingo energy and try this out of the glass.
Let's take it in the glass.
You know, we might have to adopt... Whoa! Hey, now!
Wow! What a color!
You know, Vince, I feel like we've been dying for a beer to look like this, and now it's finally here.
It looks good. This is a beautiful little hue there.
Wow-wee.
It's almost like a... what would you say? Like a red-orange type?
Yeah, it kind of looks like a foamy rosé.
Yeah, very good looker.
You know what? I'm tasting a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I don't like it as much.
I actually like it more.
Interesting.
I think when you get this Mr. Mingo out of its cage, it gets a little more Mingo-y. Now I'm just describing Mingo as a verb, and I'm not going to be able to stop.
What's the best part about Austin beers?
You've been to Austin, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I've been there as well. Yeah. Just one time. We should go for South by Southwest at some point. That'd be a lot of fun.
I'll tell you what. I think I'm out of my festival era.
Well, it's not like a music festival. It's like a film festival.
Oh, okay.
All right. It's like they debut like big movies, and they have... it's kind of like Comic-Con, but for hipsters.
Right. Doesn't really describe us, but I'll go in disguise. Listen, if Matthew McConaughey can successfully play an investment banker, I can play a hipster.
or really any of the characters he's played.
So, okay, I remember back in the day, one of my my buddies and I were just doing McConaughey back and forth, and I had the idea of a sketch where Matthew McConaughey talks like old Matthew McConaughey from Ghosts of Girlfriend Past shows up in the middle of the night to confront the new Matthew McConaughey to be like, "What happened to you? We were drowning in pussy. You give it up for what? A couple of naked gold men?" Like,
you know what's funny about that bit, though? He pretty much did that bit at the Oscars, but in reverse. He was like, if you remember him in his acceptance speech, he was like, "I had a vision, but it was myself in 5 years." And he was telling, "I'm always chasing my ghost." See, that was his whole thing. He was like, "I'm chasing my ghost, but it's not a ghost from his past. It's future.
It's a ghost that hasn't died yet."
Yeah, it's so future it's not really ghost. A ghost. Yeah.
Yeah, what it was like, "Well, I'll go back and play on the bongos."
Tony Simons told this crazy story. He was on Veep. You probably know Tony Simons. He's like the real tall, goofy guy. But they were filming that movie Gold. And they were in this foreign country where nobody spoke English. And Matthew McConaughey gets off this plane, and it's these three like Asian guys. And he just looks at them and goes like, "Ah!" And they like run up and hug him. And Tony Simons goes, "Matthew McConaughey is the only guy whose charisma transcends language." You just like look at him and he's able to connect with people instantaneously.
I mean, it's true. Honestly, like if you think about actors that you could have a beer with, that you could have anything with, like if you said, "Hey, I really want to buy you a beer," he'd be like, "Sure thing. Why not? You want to go out back and smoke some peyote too? Why not? We're gonna have a good time.
We'll ride in my Lincoln."
Yeah. Every morning, I wake up and I check to make sure that my Lincoln doors are locked because I don't live in a safe neighborhood.
You really had me locked in there. No pun intended.
And everyone else does when Matthew McConaughey speaks. He is a treasure.
I got one more rapid fire topic for you, then we can score. So we're drinking Jester King. I'd like to talk about some modern day jesters, some modern day goofs.
Yeah.
And without getting into the whole history of jesters were the medieval comedians, if you will. They were called in. They were essentially clowns, but they entertained people. So,
well, the concept of the jester originally, and this is my question, is are we going with kind of the watered-down version, or are we going with what they were there for? They were there to make fun of the king, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's more what I'm thinking of. So,
right. Well, we got first, a lot of them.
First one that I came up with was talk show hosts. So, Kimmel, Fallon, to a lesser extent, James Corden, rest in peace.
Okay, so here's what's interesting is all three of those I would not give the jester role to.
I think Kimmel is the most deserving of it.
But I don't think he's very deserving. I think you have to go to Jon Stewart. I think you have to go to Stephen Colbert.
Oh, like the satirical news
Those are the guys who are throwing it out there and actually making fun. They're not like, first of all, did Kimmel have Trump on his show?
I don't know if he did. There certainly
because I know Fallon did,
yeah.
And that was it. Fallon can never be a jester because he let Trump in on the joke.
I think when I was thinking of Fallon, it was more like, this guy is a clown. Like, he's just a joke of a person.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I like Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, but do you ever take him seriously? Like, no.
There was a point in time where I would have made the argument that Jimmy Fallon is like Northeastern McConaughey.
Oh, God. I'd love to hear more about that sometime.
I mean, it's just pretty much just a likability.
Well, aside from like people like Jon Stewart and Colbert, like who else would fit this bill?
So somebody that like, it's a good, you know what? I'm going to go with Greta Gerwig.
Greta Gerwig. Okay.
Yep.
Interesting.
She does it from a very specific point of view, but
I think almost all of her films have something to say that is holding a mirror up to an establishment that is, quite frankly, pretty unfair. I just saw the Barbie movie, so I'll throw into that. But one of the things that was pointed out to me that was super interesting was many men were upset in the Barbie movie because there was a one-dimensional male character who was nothing without the female. And that is essentially what we have been doing as a culture in movies and TV shows for years to women. So from that perspective,
yeah.
I give her credit.
Okay, you made a good case for that. I was wondering where you were going with it, but that's totally true and also fair. I wasn't really thinking about...
It's very funny.
I mean, like, the idea of a director being a jester is kind of interesting because ultimately directors are trying to say something with their films for the most part. I mean, I don't think Adam Sandler's directors are really trying to say a whole lot.
No, I agree.
Yeah, but like
they're trying to make money.
You know, like you think about Scorsese, David Fincher.
Yeah, Fincher's a good one.
You know, these people, like, I think in general to be a director, you have to have a really strong point of view. And you have to have an incredibly firm understanding of a lot of facets of life. And that's why these people are drawn to directing, because you get to tap into a lot of those things.
I think Fincher's an excellent one, truthfully.
Yeah.
He does a lot of good stuff like that.
I think you could argue that The Social Network is one of the greatest, like, examinations of a modern topic of our lifetime.
Yeah.
And I'm still thinking about how fucked up that movie was, but in a good way.
As long as you're thinking.
Yeah. I don't think I have any other jesters, so...
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe, in the more colloquial sense of the term, Charles Barkley would be a jester.
Yeah, well, he's just a regular old funny guy.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But
he
speaks the truth.
If we're saying that jesters are people who are unafraid to say controversial things but are still beloved.
I would say, and I think that's fair, but I also think you have to say controversial things that aren't just controversial for the sake of being controversial. And I don't think that Charles does that. I think he says them because there's a semblance of truth to them.
I mean, truth in comedy. We learned that a long time ago.
It's an 87-page book.
You can finish it in a couple train rides.
And I'll tell you what. It's just 87 pages of name dropping. You're not going to learn a thing.
Well, Vince, we've learned a lot about Mr. Mingo today, and I'm curious to see what you're going to give this as a score for this show.
Yeah, I'm landing on a 4 out of 5 Vinces. I think that this is a really nice, very good mixture. I think it's well done. I think it stays true to the virtues of what Jester King sought to do, and I enjoyed the flavor. That being said, I don't think I would want more than 16 ounces of this. This is shockingly, for what it's like, 4.6%.
5.5, yeah.
Okay, 5.5, sorry.
Yeah, it's not too
bad. I was very off, but regardless.
Yeah.
It's 5.5%. For a 5.5% beer, it is not as crushable as I would expect.
Well, I think that you hit something that I wanted to touch on, which was, I like this a lot, but I think one is enough. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's also fine. You know, like, there are times when I watch a movie or like I watch a limited series and I'm like, that was great. I don't need to know what happens after that. Right. And we live in a culture now where it's like, we just want like a never ending stream of content. And we stretch things out and they get fucking ruined, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that like they're going to ruin the beer. And yeah, you might have a couple more and still have a good time. But like,
oh, yeah.
I'm not going to spoil this wonderful experience by having 12 Mr. Mingos.
You would be bankrupt if you had 12 Mr. Mingos.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
Yeah, it's not cheap. But yeah, I'm going to give this a 4.25 actually out of 5 toms.
Wow.
And
okay. I didn't expect that.
I think the bonus points for me come from just this weird excitement I got the moment like I looked at the can, you know?
Good.
There was something about it that spoke to me. So for that, I'm gonna give it a little extra points.
Now, this is technically not a fruited sour, but it does skew in that general direction. So I'm excited about this for you.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I like being pleasantly surprised. We've been kind of surprised lately, which is good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you like being surprised with amazing content, how about that for a segue? Subscribe, rate, and review
us. I have to change my pants. I'll be honest.
Subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a follow on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads.
If you, I guess, what do you do? Do you reply on Threads? If you reply to one of our Threads, I'll call you out.
We will. I think that's what you do on Threads. We're still figuring it out.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. And it feels like maybe no one is on there anymore.
It's a little funky, like this beer.
Nice.
But until next time, I'm Tom.
I'm Vince.
This has been Friday Night Beers, where we have clear eyes, full cans.
Must booze.
Mr. Mingo.
Mr. Mingo.
Hey, Mr. Mingo.